Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest live episode of Vox Vomitus. I'm your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, Pretty Ugly, and The Japanese Box and Other Stories. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which have brand new covers, everybody, and they're gorgeous, which includes Dibs, Since September, Move On, Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder, all with brand new fancy covers. Joining us today, we're so excited, is one of our favorite people, Christopher Chris Golden, author of The House of Last Resort, and I think 100 other novels and comic book projects, but I'm not going to name all of them.
No. Yeah. I mean, if you could, I would pay you.
I know.
I feel like if you could name them all off the top of your head.
Oh, like a trivia thing.
But since I can't,
I could just make things up.
What's that?
Yeah. I said, you could just make up titles. You could just.
Yeah.
That's
and
true.
And I'd be like, that sounds good.
Like, yeah, I probably wrote that. There'd be no way to actually win because you would never know if it was complete. Like, maybe I wrote more than that. I don't know.
Right, yeah.
Now I just feel like, what kind of prize would I win? And will you? You'll be at NECON, yes? You won't?
Of course.
Oh, you will be. Oh, so I have a few months
to memorize. Chicken.
I'm going to
bring that's the prize.
I'm going to rubber chicken.
Rubber chicken, yes. Like, and in grand NECON tradition, that would be considered a very valuable prize.
That's all about NECON.
I know. I'm like, well, now I feel less nervous about going to my very first NECON. So,
yeah.
I'm excited. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
Thank you for having me. I feel like we're Saturday Night Live for literary podcasts because we have like people who have been on the show three or more times.
Yes.
Are like in our VIP special
yes.
circle, and this is your third appearance. I wish we had a jacket for you.
I love that.
We don't have merch.
I also wish I had a jacket. I also think that if it's sort of Saturday Night Live, the next time I'm on, I'll have to bring a musical guest.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
See, when we have Josh Wallerman on, he is his own musical guest. So who would you bring?
Who would I bring? Oh, yeah, Josh Miller would be his own musical guest.
Yeah, he's like, and me, the high strung.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question. Casey Lansdale.
Oh, because you're
singing your name in the background.
Your name.
Yeah. No, because she's a musician. She's an extraordinary country artist. She's amazing. She'd be my first choice. But no, yeah, I think that would be good. I think we should have musical guests.
All right, next time.
I actually did, because of the theme of the moment, I'm not going to, I was on another podcast last week.
You were cheating on us?
I was cheating on you.
No.
I thought we were in an open podcast relationship.
I thought this was a poly podcast
situation. No, it is.
So I was on with Liz Caron, who wrote a phenomenal vampire novel called Night's Edge, which you must read if you haven't. Mm. The sequel's coming out this week, I think. And Liz is, loved Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And when she was in high school, her high school did for charity, they did the Buffy musical.
Okay, so first off, that dates her instantly because
I was like, wow, she's so much younger than me.
Yeah, I'm like, so she's definitely a bit younger than me. But also, I wish I went to that high school because my law school friends were really tired of me singing it because I have this.
Me too. I know the lyrics to most of those songs.
And you don't have the range for most of those singers' songs. Not even Alison Hannigan, and that's saying something.
So I... because Liz played Tara, I texted Amber the link to the podcast while we were live.
Nice.
And she crashed the podcast just for like 2 minutes.
Did she sing I'm Under Your Spell? Because that's
But Liz did have like a moment.
I just got chills all over. I was like, don't start crying. It's not happening now.
It's happening in our podcast.
I feel like Jennifer's having this moment. Like, did you see the Kristen Bell with the sloth thing?
Yes.
That's one of my favorite videos that's ever been. Allison, if you haven't seen it, we'll talk about it later. You're going to...
Okay. Are we talking Sloth, a creature, or Sloth from Goonies?
The creature. The
Sloth.
Just clarify.
It's one of the most endearing human things, videos that's ever been. So yeah. I urge you to watch it.
Yeah, well, you just look at it.
Like, it also is adorable, it's on the Ellen DeGeneres show, but...
Anyway. Things can't be perfect. So, okay, we've gone all over the board already. Chris, you're here to talk about your latest release.
We were supposed to go to Italy, not all over the board. We even have our euros to buy ourselves a basically abandoned villas. Is that how that works?
Yeah. I have three.
Where's my villa, Jennifer?
I just found my euro right now, so I will get on it. But at first I only had 2 euro and I'm like, I feel like that's rude to the guests to not buy him a haunted Italian villa.
Oh, that's true.
Absolutely.
Well, but if you only had 2, you and I would share, so that's fine.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. So, Chris, tell us a little bit about House of Last Resort and yourself. So, you know, I know you're a 3-timer here, but, you know.
I mean, so the House of Last Resort came about in a couple of different ways. My wife is Sicilian, 100%. Her parents are from Sicily. Her dad passed away at 96 last year. Her mom is 86 and still with us and still owns a home in Sicily, although she lives here. And so we've had the good fortune to be over there several times. My wife more than that as a child, but I've been there several times and traveled around quite a bit. And it's just beautiful. I mean, it's a beautiful part of the world that you never want to visit in July or August, which is unfortunately when one of our trips happened. People don't quite understand, I think, when they think about it. They think, oh, Italy, you know, the Mediterranean, it's fantastic. Awesome. True. But
there are still seasons.
Well, and the southern portion of Sicily is further south than the northernmost part of Africa.
Yes.
So people don't think about how hot Sicily is.
Yeah.
Right. So in the summer, it's extremely hot. But that said,
when we watch The White Lotus, nobody's sweating. So that's, they're like, oh, well, that's Sicily.
False advertising.
I'm like, but that was probably Sicily in November.
Well, there are 9.5 other, months of the year that it's not quite as, horrifying. But basically, there are so many beautiful places. And I kept reading these articles about Italy in general, but also some in Sicily and in other countries. They do it in Japan. I think they do it in Germany. Where essentially what you have going on is sort of like the opposite of gentrification. Gentrification, you have a neighborhood that is happily inhabited by people on the lower income scale who have sometimes lived in that place for generations. And all of a sudden people start to move in and buy up property and price out, the prices go up, they price out the people who've lived there for generations. But in these places, you have towns and villages that are, half empty and not getting any more full because the young people go off to the city or elsewhere for opportunities. And so the people are not having children because the people left behind are the older people. So these places are sort of dying out. And in some of these places, the mayors have done the extraordinary, which is they basically made a deal. And this is for anyone. Basically. So if we wanted to go to one of these towns in Italy,
we do
buy for 1 euro, you can buy an empty property. You have to say you'll live there for 5 years as your primary residence. You won't rent it to somebody else. You can't like Airbnb it or whatever. And you have to spend in some cases like 50,000-60,000 euros fixing it up over the course of that 5 years. The terms differ everywhere you go. And I just thought, well, especially now with Gen Z and millennials, so many of us, but with them in particular, having the ability to work remotely.
Yeah. Why aren't people taking up on this offer? Come on.
Right.
But my husband and I have this conversation. Why wouldn't you do this? Every day.
Yes.
Right.
You could live other places, Jennifer. Please.
I know. I just choose to live in the brutal New England cold.
Where I worry about you freezing to death like every other week. So maybe find a villa.
So, of course, that led me to think, why wouldn't you do that? And if you did it, of course, you would get one that was haunted and full of evil.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, as you do. And not even just like regular haunted by a sweet ghost. House of Last Resort's got some things going on there.
Yeah,
the rats are the least of the problem.
There's a lot of demonic stuff happening at the House of Last Resort, and it's also about family, and it's about the main characters are, and this is one of the things that I really wanted to make sure I did. They're a happily married couple, which you don't typically see in horror. In horror,
I was shocked.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't offend anybody.
Well, they support each other? What is
this? A happily married couple.
No, they're just like, wait a minute, this isn't going to drive them apart.
Yeah.
That's what hauntings are supposed to do. I've read them all.
Well, these stories are always about, not just these stories, but horror stories in general. So often, if they're about a married couple, they're about the friction in the relationship and how the horror, you know, takes advantage of that friction and splits mm-hmm. Turns them against each other.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do something different, but also it's about the main male character is his grandparents live in this town. So you also get this sort of generational story. And I also was fascinated, and I'll shut up about it in a second, but I was also fascinated by the idea of, you know, those of us who are not Native American, our ancestors came from what we call the old world to what was called the new world at the time. And I'm fascinated by this idea of this reverse immigration of going back to the old world for a new beginning. Anyway.
Very cool.
I love it. When I first heard just the concept of this novel, I'm like, well, that's my perfect book because it's, you know, people moving to Italy for a Euro, which I really want to do. And then after I finished the book, I realized like my toxic trait is I would still buy that house.
That's the thing. So Jennifer and I were talking
about 100%. I'm like,
So let me get this straight. They bought the house without having seen all of the rooms. And Jennifer's like, I would have done it. I'm like, yeah, you would. So like,
I didn't see the attic of the house I'm living in. I just peeked in and they said,
exactly.
Never go in there and close the door. And I was like, I will never go in there.
Yeah. And there are enough Jennifers around to make this super plausible, especially I loved how the mechanics of it worked out. It's like, oh, we were really happy with this other place. But did you see this one on the way to the airport? That's how you offload your haunted houses. Wait till they're on the way back to the airport.
Absolutely how you offload your evil house. And I think also, you know, one of the things I had a lot of fun with is, you know, we have this weird horror fans have this weird conversation all the time about, you know, well, people wouldn't do that in real life.
Yeah, we are as a species, we do dumb stuff.
Yeah.
And it really kind of depends on what are the situational circumstances for that particular dumb, you know?
Well, the thing is, before they find out the real truth about the evil and the involvement of exorcists and all of this stuff, without giving too much away, you know, the involvement of the Vatican and stuff like that with this house, before they find that out, to me, the most genuine conversation in the whole book is when they're gathered around for dinner with these friends they call the imports, because they've all done the same thing and bought these houses, and they're from different parts of the world. And they're having this conversation where they're saying, well, so what if the house is haunted? What you should do is buy a second one, and turn this house into like a tourist attraction as your haunted house. And I would totally have that conversation.
So that seems like
it's
a good workaround.
The economy. It's mm-hmm. good for you.
Right.
The only thing is, wouldn't that nullify that you have to live in it clause? Because basically,
would
the mayor say, okay, we'll give you an exception because this is bringing in tourism and that's
yes.
the whole
thing. That was my thought. Is that I think the mayor in this story would be on board with the idea, because the idea is to bring in visitors, to bring in tourists, who might then do the same thing, you know, and that's what the whole, somebody was sort of criticizing the characters as, you know, being gentrifiers in that way. And I'm like, no, you're missing the point.
There's nothing there. They're not displacing the community.
Right. They've been asked to do this. Yes. Please come into our community and revitalize it, and in whatever way is necessary so it can continue.
Well, and I thought of all the Of all the things, like, yes, lots of people now can work remotely, but what job can work more remotely than writers? So I don't see why we don't get together, and all over the globe, we need to be having like writer communes of 1 euro, 1 yen, whatever local currency,
yeah,
by the place. One or two people live there and the rest of us can go and be like, you know, I need to research what's going on in Greece. Who's got a place in Greece?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
we go and stay.
I'm for it.
Yeah. We should do it.
But we could have a database of the ones that are like actively haunted.
This one has
like a benevolent ghost that just like tends to the kitchen. You can smell baking bread. This one has rats that get kind of aggressive if you go near the basement.
Both, I like the bread, but at the same point in time, that would probably be bad for my waistline because I would then keep eating bread. Even if there wasn't bread, I would go find bread. I'm like, ideas of bread. And then, you know, gluten.
Yeah. It'll get me. No, listen, I mean, that was when I was describing this town. I know that I talked about the flowers and I talked about the bakeries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're both in there. And I love how the grandmother, when she finds out what house it is, she's like so not impressed with, it's all about the flowers, the garden. It's like, do you not realize what you've done? It's like, but we have a really lovely yard.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they're like, it's beautiful. She's like, so fucking what? It's full of evil. Exactly.
But in Italian. I don't know how to say any of that in Italian. And I did love the idea because this is totally, well, this has kind of happened to me, of the you go someplace and you're like, my grasp of this language is probably not what it should be, because back when I was in high school, I studied Spanish and then I went to Brazil, the one country in South America that doesn't speak Spanish. And my grasp of Portuguese, not so good.
No, it's not. For our 10th wedding anniversary, we went to Spain and it was really interesting because Connie could understand, my wife is Connie, could understand what people were saying to her. But if she tried to respond to them in Italian, they didn't. Plus, she speaks an old Sicilian dialect that they no longer speak in Sicily.
Oh, dear.
So she could understand them, but they couldn't understand her. Pardon me, but I had enough Italian. Excuse me. I had enough Spanish. Just little bits and pieces from high school, college. That I could express what I needed to express to them, and they could respond in Spanish, and she could tell me what they said. I couldn't understand a word.
That is the worst Google Translate ever, Chris. I love it.
It worked. No, the only things I know how to say in Italian are all ways to tell people off in the old Sicilian dialect.
Oh. I just know food.
How to say you are an idiotic drunken writer.
Oh.
Because I thought I was to myself.
Oh, okay.
No, it was to myself. It was before I was like technically writing when I went to Italy, but I just had this feeling that I would have to shout that from like a balcony at some point in time.
Why?
I don't know. I like watching too many movies and just thinking I would be like, da, 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 you know.
I saw like half a dozen Diane Lane movies about her, living in a villa somewhere in Italy, and she never yelled that.
No, I know. I don't know.
I mean,
fantasies. Also, I was drinking like absinthe during the day when I was
directly.
In Italy,
yeah.
So
well, and I'm thinking the things we should be learning are really the exorcism rites. Like, let's make sure we have those down before we start buying any houses of questionable origin, just in case we need them. Just in case.
I mean, I feel like as a rule, if it was ever church property, stay away.
Stay away.
Okay, yeah. But my favorite Mexican restaurant locally used to be a church. Before that, it was a different restaurant, but before that, it was a church, and the food is delicious. I haven't had a problem.
You're eating demons.
You know what? I just realized my favorite thing to eat there is shrimp Diablo. So maybe it's a problem.
They're telling you what's going on.
Shout out to Avalas. Aranchito.
Yeah, it always made me sad that I never got a chance to go to the Limelight in New York, which was a club that was inside an old church.
Ooh.
I think that would be good. A great location to have like a horrible slaughter happen.
Yes.
I mean,
I say that
in fiction. Like, let me just
fictional slaughters. We're not.
I'm thinking about like something out of one of the Blade movies where vampires come in and kill everybody.
Yes. Not like happens. Mm, no,
different kind of thing. Yeah,
Chris, were you raised Catholic?
Yeah.
Okay. So
that shows.
So I always have like ghosts I can deal with. They don't scare me. Mm-hmm. Even when I read about it, even if they're bad ghosts, I'm like, I'm not very scared of this, but I still enjoy it. But yeah. The second demon and the word exorcism pops up, I get like old fashioned little kid, like, do I know any priests? It's usually the first thing I think, like, yeah. Who could I call?
See, if I thought, do I know any priests? My second thought would be, did they touch anyone inappropriately?
Yes, when
I
was exactly. Out?
Not me. But no, look, I went to Catholic school for 12 years.
You survived kids, high school?
I sent my kids to Catholic school because we live in an area that where, particularly when we moved here, the schools were not great. And my wife and I had a long conversation about it. And I thought, well, at least they'll get sort of like a fundamental, right versus wrong. You know, they'll get a better education and also a sort of fundamental moral thing. And at home we said, yes, but when they talked about various things regarding, and honestly, I call myself a Christian atheist. And I call myself a Christian atheist because I don't believe in God, but I believe in all of the Christian philosophy that was taught to me when I was growing up. Yeah. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Yeah.
So I rage at probably 90% of the people who call themselves Christians.
Because they don't follow any of that.
Because you know, I had the hippie folk music Jesus when I was a kid.
Yeah, you had the Maranatha version of Jesus. Folk music
Jesus was like, hey, you know what? Mm-hmm. It's just like when you go to a Frank Turner concert, my favorite musician, he says, rule number one, don't be a dick.
Yes.
And literally, that's Jesus. Rule number one is don't be a dick. Yeah. Exactly. And I feel like so many people don't know rule number one. So
they're just hearing dick, and that's the only thing they're like.
Well, yeah. Well, what is the question?
Be a dick. Okay.
Which Jesus do you follow? Original Jesus or the Americanized version? Because that's the one you run into trouble with. But I love the touches there because you could see there was like both. I don't want to say a reverence, but there was a respect for what was going on that I never felt like. Ooh, a Catholic reading this would be really, really ragey right now because it never crossed that line. They should also just be terrified with the rest of us about what's going on in the book and reading it like this. Or in my case, so I would have just held up my phone because this was on Spotify. So I listened to it on Spotify. So sometimes, you know, you look like an idiot doing this while listening to, because like it's not coming in your eyes. It's coming in your ears.
And it's so hard.
What's up?
When you're reading with your eyes and something like horrifying or really gross is happening, you can easily be like, rat. Okay, it's fine. The rat part's done or whatever. But when you're listening to something, I mean, there have been plenty of times that I'm like, oh no, taking the headphones out.
You did that on the show when we had Clay on.
I was going to say, oh, like when Clay McCullough Chapman started talking disgusting crab things and I had to take my headphones out.
Peelers.
He said the word peelers.
I love that.
No.
One of my favorite editors, probably the best editor I ever had, had a thing with eye damage.
Oh, that's Jennifer. She can't handle it. Nope, she's done. I'll let you know when we're back. Yeah, there are certain things.
I'm not going to say anything disgusting, Jennifer,
I'm having the opposite reaction to when you were talking about Amber earlier.
Oh, I know. We had Heron Ennis on and their book had a lot of eye stuff and I'd read it like a year before and forgot. And Jennifer's like, you didn't warn me about it. I'm like, I'm sorry. She's like, is there any more? I'm like, I really don't remember.
My anxiety disorder caused me to believe I had the same kind of parasite living behind my eye that was in that book.
Well, and I listened to it again, but I think you were ahead of me at that point. So I'm just like, okay, now at the end, okay, you're all right. There's no more eye stuff. You should be okay. She's like, I just can't. I'm like, I'll tell you what happens. You're all right. Because there are some things where you're just like,
I love horror. I love it so much. And I like disgusting things, but I am irrationally afraid of crabs. And I have like eyeballs give me the ick big time. So
I just need a list. Like, where are we with raw meat?
Oh, I mean, that's because I accidentally ate raw meat when I was a kid.
That's you. Yeah. Well, and that's the kind of thing because it's funny. Jennifer has like pushed me more and more and more towards horror to the point where it's like, I swear this show, it is not a horror podcast. We just happen to feature a lot. Like, who do we have on next time? It's like a rom-com. I promise.
We have Margaret Evans Porter.
Usually she makes me read those on my own show because she usually is like romance and she won't read that. So it's not so much a gross factor. It's a she won't tolerate it factor.
Okay.
I'm dead inside.
That's a different thing.
Well, again, just to be clear, what I did to this editor is I purposely inserted this scene where a character kills a guy and kills him by pushing her fingers through his eyes. Mm. And then when he's down, she drags him across the floor by his eye sockets. With her fingers in the orbits of his eyes and drags him across
the floor. We all saw that happen to Pedro Pascal.
What?
What?
Game of Thrones. Sorry for anybody who didn't see.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Before I forget when he goes down, but it's bad because he was winning too, and then he's done.
She wrote in the margins of in her copy edit. She wrote, "You're such a jerk."
Yeah. And then she wrote it in Italian.
Yeah, no, that wasn't this book. Yeah,
it's fine. No, there was no eyeball stuff in this book, which is why Jennifer didn't have to go. Oh, yeah. Or since she was reading, she just close it, put it over there, going, not touching that for a while.
No, it had everything I love.
And no eyeball stuff. So she appreciates that very, very much. But okay, can I talk for just a minute? Because my FOMO has still been so over the top about how you launched this book, because you and Jennifer got to hang out along with a lot of other cool people at this thing. It was called The House of Last Resort. So I love that you did that. And I'm seeing like other people coming up with cool ways to launch their book, which makes me go, okay, I'm never going to have a book launch as cool as like getting all the people
hang out.
And how fun is that? I want to do that.
You just need your long lost cousin, Brian Keene, to organize it for you. Cause Brian was the mastermind.
There's another Keene out there too. And I want to claim that we're all related, and I don't know if we are, but if Brian goes along with it, I don't care.
Brian is usually game, you know? And in fact, it was his idea. I mean, so really what happened is, you know, I basically said, look, I don't know what to do to, you know, it's harder and harder and harder to promote, because social media companies have purposefully undermined your ability to use their platforms to promote anything
without paying for it.
And so I was just like racking my brain, and I posted something about it, and Brian called me and he said, I know exactly what to do. You know, you got to do the House of Last Resort weekend. And I felt sick to my stomach because
you're humble and sweet.
Well, I just thought, well, nobody's going to come to that.
I can understand that. I would have the same reaction going, what if people don't want to come to this? It's like, but yeah, I want to come.
And Chris is being such a dick. Wow.
Yeah.
A whole weekend?
I was super concerned about people like looking at that, like, boy, that's obnoxious. That's like, you know, you think that you're worth having that weekend. And I was definitely worried about that, but I talked to a few fellow writers, including like Josh Malerman, and Malerman was like, that's the greatest idea ever. You have to do it.
Exactly.
And there were a few other people. So I was like, all right, you know what the hell? Like we'll do it. And, I had all kinds of plans, to follow up with it, but then, and it was great. I mean, it was, what was amazing about it was that I contacted a bunch of writers that I really admire. And I said, look, I'm going to do this. It's a promotion for the book, but it's also like a reader's convention.
Exactly.
And there are no guests. It's free for people to come to it. Every time when I did the Merrimack Valley Halloween Book Festival for years, it was always free, which is really important to me that there's a barrier, because if you have to travel or stay there, but it doesn't cost you anything to come in and have the conversations and look at the books. And so that was all sort of happening. And so I had this plan, and all these writers were like, yeah, I'd love to come to that. And people like flew in from, like Violet Castro flew from England. You know what I mean? Like people came from all over the place to come to this. And it made me so happy and so humbled to have that. And so two things. The first is that on that first night, I said, look, this worked. Like I look around the room, there's so many people here, it worked. So I want to say to all the other writers who are here, keep doing it.
Do fun stuff. Be together.
Just proved it can work. And in fact, I know that Gabby Triana went home. She lives in Miami, and she went home immediately and was like, I'm going to plan a Miami horror, you know, book festival, which is great. So I love that. Because again, they're not giving us the other opportunities to do it. So we have to do it however we can. And then the other thing was that on Friday night, the second night of the event, a total stranger approached me while I was signing books and asked if I had a few minutes to talk afterwards. She seemed very emotionally upset about something. And I was like, sure. So after I finished signing, I went and sat and talked to her at the bar for about 20 minutes. And she, you know, she was upset, and she was, I was trying to sort of talk about something that happened in the horror community and offer her some comfort or wisdom or whatever. So I woke up the next morning to a DM from her husband saying, hey, you know, looking for her. We were talking last night and apparently she tested positive for COVID. So
that's how you,
I had not had COVID.
You were
so
like
4 years in, I had not had COVID. And so I went through the day and basically said, okay, as of 6 o'clock on Saturday, I'm leaving my weekend. So by 6 o'clock, I went around and said goodbye to everybody and said, just in case I have COVID. And sure enough, like 4 days later, I did have COVID. And I had a family member at the time who was going through medical procedures that meant they were immunocompromised. Yeah. And so I stayed away from my house for 2.5 weeks.
You were like exiled at that point.
Yeah. So basically all the things I had planned to do to follow up on the House of the Last Resort weekend were canceled.
Yeah.
I had a bunch of appearances, like signings, I canceled everything. And so the weekend definitely worked, but I couldn't ever really evaluate how well it worked because I couldn't follow up on.
Right. Because you were like, oh, did this bring a lot of people to my signings, blah, blah.
Well, and the thing that I heard, because I was following this all virtually and watching there with my popcorn going, I miss getting to do this kind of stuff. And it'll be a while till my kids are of an age where I'm able to go anywhere without being home at night with them. And from California to anywhere else is pretty much out. But just, I love that. Yes, it was about your book, but it was also such a community event and that there were panels and all this stuff. So anybody watching this going, yeah, but it still sounds like an awful lot about just one, but it wasn't, because it was this celebrating this one thing, but there were so many panels and different people participating. And I saw these pictures and I was just like, I want to be there. I want to do the next one that maybe,
it was such a beautiful, beautiful weekend. Honestly, it was the very first horror convention conference I'd been to.
Was it really? I didn't realize.
Because I've been doing like crime stuff.
I know you did Crime Bacon. I guess that's different. I just like the name because it makes me think of clams.
Yeah. So it was my first jumping into the pool of like the horror community in person. And it was amazing. And
I'm glad.
Everybody was so wonderful. The next day I signed up for Nikon. I was just like,
And when's Nikon? And I'm assuming NE stands, it's New England. That's what it means.
Okay. Yeah, well, actually, I think it stands for Northeast in this case, but same difference.
Northeast is New England.
It's so the New Yorkers don't get mad.
Oh, so they won't be part of it too? What about the Pennsylvanians? Are they / we included?
I think Northeast. Mm-hmm. People come from all over. But no, you know, the thing is, Brian was very much like, you should do, he wanted to do a whole panel that was just like, I think he wanted to call it Christopher Golden Touched Me. Great. Thanks, Brian.
And we're back to the conversation about which priest you can call. Wrong title, Brian.
Exactly.
Like the horror community doesn't have enough.
He wanted to do it that way. But yes, it was that. But I was like, no, because what we did instead is that some of the panels were specific, like there was a panel on exorcism stories so we took some of the thematic elements of the book as subjects for panels, but it was very much not there. I think there were two panels that were specifically related to my book, but everything else was just more general. And we really wanted to make that happen and make use of the wonderful people who were coming. Mm-hmm. But also, look, I have been saying since the beginning of my career, and I had a lot of influences from people who helped me, that, you know, I always go back on that old cliche, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
And we need to do that. And when I was 22 and went to Nikon the first time I went, John Skip and Craig Spector were there, and I was talking to them I was thanking them for how kind they were being to me. And one of them, I think it was Craig Spector, said, hey, look, you know what? Clive Barker reached down and pulled us up onto this ledge and said, there's room up here for all of us. And we want to make sure that we continue to do that. And I've had those experiences many times. Now, I've had the opposite experience as well many times. But I don't think, but honestly, not usually from horror people.
Tell us later.
Usually from fantasy and science fiction people. But in any case.
That's my
genre, Dan.
I know.
Yeah. And in any case, honestly, it is. And I think it's because horror is the underdog.
Yeah. And always I know we've talked about that we've talked about how horror as a community doesn't look down on indie and small press the way certain other genres do. And right. Look at it as they're all equally valid. Is the story good? And hey, maybe it was printed by a smaller place and then later gets picked up and gets a bigger run. And these are all equally valid. And are you telling good stories and are they well crafted? Not who's your publisher? Oh, who's your agent? And it's a little bit less maybe elitist or closed the door.
If you're lucky enough to be in a position where you're offered work that you can't do, that you can't take, or that doesn't fit somehow for you at the time, and you don't try to turn that toward another writer that you know could really use it and would be also would be good at it.
Good fit, yeah.
You've abdicated responsibility, I feel. I just feel like you, so don't just say no, say, I'm sorry, I can't do that, but you know who would be great.
I love that.
Because
you're helping both sides then, because you're helping fill the niche and you're also showing the person, I think you're worth this too.
You're building the community and you're, and a million years ago, I owned a comic book store that didn't do very well. It was in the Midwest. It's a hard comic books, old paper. It's a hard business to really make money on. And then other comic book shops would open up and people would be like, oh my gosh, are you scared? And I'm like, no, because any comic shop is helping this industry because they're across town. Somebody's going to walk into that shop for the first time and fall in love with comic books or fall in love with, old horror, fall in love with something that eventually is going to help all of us.
Right.
And people are like, that's such a weird attitude to have for a business owner. I'm like, I'm here because I'm a fan first and foremost.
More comic shops mean more comic readers.
Yes,
exactly.
And more successful horror authors or authors in general mean more readers.
Right. Exactly. That's I just feel like if you're doing this, you're doing it because you love it. And if you love it, then you love, I read every day, I'm reading something all the time.
I always worry about the authors who don't. And I'm just like,
I'm always nervous. Yeah. When they're like, I'm just too busy to read or I'm just not a big reader. I'm like, then how?
Such a fan. There are so many writers that I'm such a fan of. And I make a point to say, and I think that, again, if you're a writer, it's incumbent upon you when you read something you love to spread the word, to say that you read it and you loved it. Even if that somebody is, especially if that somebody is in the same category as you,
Well, because I think that people forget that most readers in a certain genre, they don't only read one author in that genre. And even if they read everything that author put out, that still leaves a lot in their calendar to be filled. And wouldn't you want it to be filled by other good stuff rather than have them read something that's like, that wasn't very good, but I won't tell you about the stuff that is good because it might take away some of my sales. That's a terrible attitude to have. Yeah. You want to have them go fall more and more in love with this genre and with these books and these stories. And here are the ones I loved.
Instead of saying, this is the thing I didn't like, I'll tell you right now that that's the reason I have wicked allergies, by the way. But
we were just going to blame COVID again, but I'm glad it's just
okay. No. I Brian Keene and I are editing an anthology of short stories set in the world of Stephen King's The Stand.
When can I have that? And is it now?
I get chills every time I hear that concept.
Yeah. It's called The End of the World as We Know It. And it's authorized and King's going to write the introduction and all that stuff. And the stories have been great. And this is the kind of thing that I mean, the reason I started editing anthologies years ago was not because I wanted to be an editor. Mm-hmm. It was because I get excited about things and I'm like, oh, it would be so cool if X, and then I want to do that thing. And so this was sort of out of the blue. And we've gotten some amazing stories, but I have to tell you, like, I just got a story. I had this idea, like, because of the stories that were coming in. And I was like, you know what? I really want to see, I probably shouldn't be saying this because it's like spoiler. But so I said, I really wish somebody would do a Watership Down style story set in the world.
Is it going to have Billy Bumblers? Because I need a Billy Bumbler story. And please tell me they're not hurting Billy Bumblers.
They're not Billy Bumblers.
Sorry, I am still dealing with it right now.
So then I thought, well, who do I know of who's going to do a story already for this book?
Did you get Paul Tremblay?
I'm like, that sounds like a Paul Tremblay thing.
Who would do an amazing story like this? So I asked that author. And
are you going to tell us that author?
Yes. Immediately she was like, that is an amazing idea. And I, she was so excited by it, which I thought she would be. I hoped she would be. And so I just finished editing it, and it's by Katrina Ward.
Oh, that is perfect.
And
also, thank you for pronouncing her name, because that O gets me every time. Am I supposed to use that? I'm not. Who put that there?
Yeah. Well, you know, on the other side of the pond, they do things differently.
They add random U's
all over the place. They double L's in places.
Because I've read a couple of hers. We would love to have her come on. So if you want to just poke at her, tell her.
Tell her we love her.
Email me and I'll forward the email to her.
Yeah, we would love that.
By the way, that's for Jennifer and Allison, not to people
who... not to strangers.
Please, email Christopher and demand Watership Down like stories. I love that. And I'm sure you can't tell us, but I need more stories that feature the train system. I need all the Billy Bumbler stories.
But that's the Dark Tower. And, you know, that's the Dark Tower.
Oh, you're talking Stan, not Dark Tower. Okay. Stan, still, I would like all of these things. So if you're going to do a Stan version one, I would like that. And then can we have the Dark Tower to have, because I just need more Billy Bumblers, honestly. I'm still dealing with those. So is there one that's going to be a musical version with Baby Can You Dig Your Man?
No, there is one that's musical related, though. Music related. But, you know.
When is this book coming out?
I think I would like it now. My brain still is like in the wrong universe, because it's like it heard Stephen King and jumped to, because Mike Flanagan's going to be doing Dark Tower. My brain went to that instead of to the Stand.
Fair enough. I believe the book is out next year, but I think until we deliver it, which is probably going to be by May 15th at the latest, they probably won't slot an actual release date. Because they want to make sure they actually have the book.
That's a crazy idea. They actually have the book.
There are writers who have yet to turn their stories in.
Well, and that's true with an anthology. It's not just one person. It's a bunch of people working on a deadline, and then you got to edit.
In this case, it's like 35 stories.
That's a chonker. I love it.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, and also horror, you have to make sure there's no internal drama about, you know, problematic people at this point in time.
Oh my God. Listen.
It's been a stressful many months for you, Chris.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Problematic people usually turn out to be people you've either never heard of or that you've barely heard of. Yeah, exactly. And
then they show themselves out eventually.
Yeah. Right. Like,
Or
they get shown out.
And we get it a lot on social media, even just like there are certain people and then they change names. And I was like, oh, it's this person again. They just change names and avatars. And that's one of the things about social media that like, I will never use a picture that isn't me. I'm never going to do that. And yes, there's some security concerns. Like your face is out there. I'm like, yeah, but it's always going to be me. And when you see people who are like, well, they went by this name, and this name, and they got three different agents and burned three different people and still have problematic behavior, it's like that anonymity just gets you. And I will say none of them were horror writers. So just let's throw other communities under the bus too.
Well, this happened the other day that I saw one referring to somebody who had apparently been masquerading for years as someone in the Latin community.
Just read this.
Yes, that's
and had like five different names.
Right.
But what I was happy to know is that I didn't recognize any of those names.
Exactly. Well, the funny thing is that came back, and one of the people who had already been previously kind of just exposed themselves and all like that as being a problematic person, that person who had just then had the multiple names was involved in that. And that person tried to come back and say, see, they were really the problematic one all the time. And everybody on the internet just shut them down and were like, no, why did you think you were going to come back here? And
Yeah. We didn't say just because they're problematic, it means you're not.
You're not an enemy of my enemy is your friend kind of thing. This is like, you guys are all problematic. And
yeah. And I posted about this. I talked about this at the Halloween, the House of the Last Resort weekend. And I posted about this recently. And I always feel badly for writer friends of mine who feel like they have a certain image of what the horror community is because they've been told what it is by people who have an opinion about the horror community. And I try to say, like, any community, any writing community you can name, but any community, it's like, it's, I always come back to the story of the five wise blind men and the elephant, you know, like somebody's holding the trunk and somebody's holding the tail and they're talking about a community,
right?
You know, on one side you're talking to the elephant, but on the other side he's shitting on you. And this is right.
I was thinking about maybe different perspectives.
But it's that too. Like if in that story, the five blind men and the elephant, somebody's got the ear and somebody's got the leg. And so when they're describing the elephant, they all have different ideas of what an elephant is.
Right.
And so when anybody talks about the horror community, I try to say to them, like, your experience of what that means is not the same as the next person's experience of what that means. Mm-hmm. So you have to remember that in any community, and I also said this online recently, like, if I go on my computer and I look at my community, the area in which I live, I can look up that website that shows me where all the sex offenders live.
Yeah.
They're part of my community.
Whether I want them there or not.
Right. And so the thing is that every community, whatever you call a community, is made up of a variety of people, some of whom are scumbags.
Yeah.
Every community.
Welcome to humanity.
Is also made up of subsets of, like, individuals, mm-hmm. but also small groups of friends and small groups of professionals. And that there's that overlap. And so you could draw a big circle around all of those people and call them a community. But that doesn't, there's no homogenous element to that. You know, it's like you're always going to have snakes in the garden, like, to add another metaphor to this.
And I think the thing is, and this is something that I've heard, because there was also a lot of stuff coming out, and this isn't related to horror specifically, but about an event that just happened that was handled really, really poorly. And it's really all about how... Yeah. When something comes up that didn't go right or that somebody acted poorly or something, what kind of accountability and what's the response?
Right.
And one of the things that I saw recently, and I'm like, I completely agree with this, is don't go painting anybody with a broad brush when you don't know if they were even aware of it. Because half the time stuff goes on and it's like so-and-so and like this corner of the community is all abuzz. And this person over here has been having their head down working in their novel.
But
if they didn't publicly take a stand, they must have secretly supported. They had no idea it was happening. You know,
as happened with me recently and a number of other people with this one project, or we've found out about it and we are taking the time to do our due diligence and find the receipts and talk to a number of people to find out what really happened instead of just going along with, you know, like what we always say, like, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
Just because it's on Twitter doesn't mean it's a fact.
Exactly. So
but Twitter isn't always facts.
Yeah. And it just drives me insane. So we ended up finding that a lot of the stuff that we were hearing at least seems to be true. We had some receipts, you know, and we had a lot of people raising their voices, and we got to the point where we're like, okay, clearly there's enough here that we just can't do anything that is going to benefit this person. Right.
Yeah.
But in the case of another guy that came up recently, it was instantaneous. It was, and I, somebody I didn't know. They were instant receipts. here are like five women who are posting a whole, yes, a whole bunch of interactions with him where he's acting like a total scumbag.
Yuck.
And then instantly you can go like, okay, this guy.
There are receipts.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, and it's also funny, yeah, because going back to the situation that I know that I encountered where that a person who was like, oh, this person was bad and they were saying stuff about me and I was actually innocent the whole time, that there were things that I knew that person had said about prior agents and stuff like that, that were not verified. And I would always hate for someone's public reputation to be tarnished by one person who has an axe to grind or is upset about something. And then that, absolutely, one thing is like ruin someone's public reputation or career even. And I know in at least one case, I don't know if it ruined them, but it certainly made them, no one has seen them since. So it's like, maybe it was for the best and they just backed away and went, I don't want to mess with the craziness that is the publishing industry, and fair enough. But
well, I feel like, yeah, we can always go back to what Chris said before. Part of Christianity, don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
On either side.
Aramaic or yeah, Latin or, you know, is whatever language.
God says, don't be a dick.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. But meanwhile, that would be a good t-shirt.
Jennifer, yeah, you know what you would like? Have you seen the creation of man, but in the middle, it's got the dog and they're just petting the dog?
Yeah.
It's the best. Like, oh, it's good boy.
I would like that.
Yeah. You know what? A dog in the garden would have been made things so much easier.
He would have eaten the snake and got the apple.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, done.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's all good.
So, Chris, you said you are about to finish your next book.
Almost done.
You've got this.
Close.
Do we know when that's coming out? Or can you give us any little hints about that before we end?
I don't know. I don't know when it's coming out.
Do you know the title?
I do.
You don't need to tell us unless you want to.
Can you tell
I'm
us?
Not, I don't think I'm going to share that yet.
Okay.
What about in like hand puppet signals instead?
Yeah. Like charades.
What I can tell you is that it actually, unusually for me, takes place in the Gulf of Mexico and off of Galveston, Texas.
Ooh. Oh.
Which is different for me. And I can tell you that it involves witchcraft.
Oh. The only time I've ever been to Galveston was at a ballroom dance competition, and that had a lot of witchcraft.
I was going to say, they were acting kind of witchy.
Or was it bitchcraft? I think it might have been bitchcraft.
Did you win?
My husband and I came in second in our professional division that we
nice
in. And then we also danced pro-am with our students. So.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. We did a dark, creepy dance. And then afterwards, people were whispering, oh, those are those ones that did that creep show. And I'm like, thank you.
Was that the one? Is that the reason you have the pigeon mask?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
I mean, I probably not wear a mask specific with your like creepy dances because it's probably.
No,
like,
the pigeon mask was for a burlesque number.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So on that were note, there wait, but were there wings, feathers?
No, I have done wing things, but not during that pigeon number. And I never ended up wearing the pigeon head in a show. It was going to be like a David Lynch kind of thing. It seemed, I feel like
they, good idea at the time.
I think we might have been joking when we came up with the idea. And then we were like, this is brilliant.
Inspired again.
No, but honestly, I feel like knowing some people who are involved in the burlesque community, that a David Lynch burlesque show, like all themed, would probably be very popular.
We, right before COVID, I was choreographing a Stephen King burlesque show. Our Pet Cemetery number was to Magical Mr. Mistopheles from Cats.
No.
And our cat bodies were just rotting off.
Like the bones are falling off. Yeah. And the ears and
people were like,
tail.
It's supposed to be sexy. And I'm like, no.
None of that is sexy. What about Pet Cemetery? Should never be sexy. It's a dead kid, Jennifer. It's a dead kid. That's not sexy.
I know. Yeah, it was shaping up to be a great show.
Now I have Magical Mr. Mistopheles.
COVID happened.
That is our outro. Yeah, no.
You can sing Magical Mr.
I will.
Please. Chris, thank you so much again for being here. Here is a euro and a key to
perfect. Thank you.
A demon-infested Italian villa. enjoy.
Yeah, thank you. I can't wait to be in my demon infested Italian villa, and I'll see you guys there.
We'll
have some neighbors. I wonder if we can find three in a row.
Yeah,
that would be good.
I bet we could, because you know some of those have tunnel systems.
So. I'm thinking vault, but that's because I've been watching Fallout. So that's
you know different. Some of them have catacombs.
Mm-hmm. Catacombs.
Yeah.
If you like catacombs, rats, demons, Italy.
If that's your thing. If
House of Last Resort's your book.
€1. No, wait, that's not
€1.
Never mind.
I know the book's more than
mine. I put on Spotify, and I don't think it costs €1 because I don't know the conversion.
Everybody tune in next week when we have Margaret Evans Porter talking about her latest rom-com, A Change of Location. And then 2 weeks after, we're going to have Lindy Ryan talking about her incredible Vampire Texas beginning of a saga. Bless your heart.
Bye.